This is the 1895 podcast, official podcast of Shelburne FC, bringing you news, views and interviews from inside Tolka Park, Dublin's finest since 1895. Here's your host, Stephen Duty.
Hello and welcome to the 1895 podcast, the official podcast of Shelburne Football Club. What a weekend to be a Red. 6 points from six in our competitive senior games. Our academy had a clean sweep for the first time ever. It's all very, very positive. Worryingly positive. Ben Cleary, you are here to bring the positivity down. How are you?
I'm good, Duty. Feeling a bit better. You know, I was on the injury list last week and I believe there was a replacement drafted in, but obviously I've won my team, my spot on the team straight back. So happy to be here as always.
Well, on that, we have a few issues from last week. So, the man in question, of course, well, we're missing two people from last week. Adam was just unavailable, just for work and that, which happens. Darren wasn't asked back for a couple of reasons. He offended Paul Skinner, which we can't have. There's been enough pod guest slash player feuds in the last couple of years, so we didn't need one with a staff member. And I have to out him. I do feel I have to out him. Ben, there's something in the water in the Cleary household, and not that water that you drank that made you horribly sick. We met up with Darren, myself, Alan Smith, Reggie, met up before the Pats game. As is the norm, you unfortunately weren't there because you were sick. Darren ate chicken wings with a knife and fork, Ben.
Ooh, now that wouldn't be for me. No, you're leaving too much meat on the bone. Just get chicken nuggets then.
Yeah, get chicken nuggets like the child, like the man child that you are. Oh,
I love you, Darren.
Alan Smith was particularly peeved by it.
But Alan Smith was very weird with food like that. Do you remember one time someone tried to just cut a burger and not eat it, and he said something that cannot be repeated here?
Oh, jeez, no. No. We'll have to start doing a pod after the watershed for half of them stories to come out. But look, back to the important stuff. Back to the important stuff.
The good
6 points from six. A mad weekend. Incredible. Obviously started Friday night. Away to Pats in Inchicore, and the Reds, I would say, ran out comfortable winners again.
Yeah, I think so. One thing I thought about performance, and it was something I thought about the Bowes game as well. We've gone to two difficult away grounds and haven't looked like the away team, if that makes sense. Atmosphere didn't get to them. Opposition fans, player, nothing seemed to faze the players. They just went out, men on missions. They had their job. They knew what they were doing. They were settling for nothing less than the 3 points. And they went out and got it. They looked so comfortable. Like, I think that's a hallmark of a great team where you can go anywhere and play your game. Nothing kind of affects them. And that's the way it's looked from those two games to me anyway.
Yeah, I think we're just really stubborn. That's something that I keep coming back to. Like, we're just awkward to play against. We can soak up pressure as we did for the last 20 minutes. We can cut teams open. We can counter attack. We can be patient and work the ball around teams. Just seem to kind of be able to do a bit of everything. Like, in fairness, the first half I thought was quite tight. You obviously watched it on the telly, I'm presuming. And from that god awful view where the shed used to be in Inchicore, it's kind of hard to tell, but was nip and tuck. I thought it was quite tight. I really felt at half time, this could be, you know, we could drop points here, definitely. This could be a point. I probably would have taken a draw at half time, to be totally honest with you. That's probably just the cynical Shells fan in me. But
yeah, the Shells pessimism, isn't it?
The famous Shells pessimism. But like, go on.
Yeah, I watched it from home, obviously, because I wasn't well. But I just thought we dominated the game. Like, I just didn't see, like, Pats in their spells in possession just didn't look like they were going to create anything. There was one or two times, like, it was a carbon copy of Will Jarvis's two goals in the first half, where he's on that side, he cuts in and it goes just wide. Matty Smith had another great chance in the first half. Like, there was a chance from a corner. Chances were there for us, and I just didn't see that on the other side. Like, I didn't see Pat create something and say, oh, we got away with that one. I think we created a lot. We did a lot, and we really pushed them. I think at the end of the first half, maybe it's just because I'm watching from home, and maybe I do see a little bit more of the pitch, but I was like, this game is here for us. Like, I just didn't feel they were up for it to the same extent.
It's funny you say that, because I usually watch the games back. Didn't get a chance to this weekend, just been Paddy's weekend, bank holiday yesterday. It was a busy, busy out weekend, so didn't get a chance to watch it back. But like, there's already two different opinions. Like, I thought it was very, very tight. At the time, you're probably saying differently, that we looked to have the better of the chances. I'm trying to think now off the top of my head. We don't give away a whole lot of chances at all, really. Like, we gave away in the Bowls game, they had a one-on-one that was saved by Conor Cairns, obviously. And then, like, on Friday night, even the goal, like, I know Darren asked Joey O'Brien about it in his post-match interview about, like, you know, is it kind of easier to... I'd always think this way as well. So it was interesting Darren asked the question that way. Is it sometimes easier to accept conceding a goal when it's kind of your own doing? Like, Jarvis obviously gives the ball away in an area he shouldn't do, and then the bit of quality comes in. I think it was Brandon Kavanagh whipped a great ball in, and Mulroney headed home. But, like, again, sometimes it's good hearing from the different voice, like Joey, because he's looking at it as a centre-half.
Yeah.
And like, he didn't even really mention giving the ball away. He more mentioned that we were too deep. We were way too deep to defend the cross. And that's like... And he mentioned it again in his interview, Joey, about that's what I see. Like, I just think we were way too deep. And I never even thought at the time. I don't think anyone in the crowd did. I think everyone was more like, oh, geez, Will, what are you giving the ball away there for? But that's probably the rough that you have to take along with the smooth that Jarvis is bringing us at the minute.
Yeah, I think you look at what he offers up front and, you know, the quality that he offers. Like, he's a proven goal scorer, and he's been... You kind of look at the kind of maybe shortcomings and the little faults in his game, and I think they're a little bit easier to stomach and kind of overlook when he loses that ball and he's not just turning and busting a gut to get back. Like, it's kind of... I think Darren said it to Joey as well, and you touched on it there, that, like, it's completely against the run of play. It's just... It's not a fault in the tactics. It's just an individual error. So I think those kind of little individual errors, you kind of look past. Like, he was absolutely exhausted. He ran himself into the ground by that stage. So,
yeah. But in a way, I think it's kind of unlucky that, like, it was the only kind of major chance we coughed up. And, like, even at that, it wasn't really a major chance. Like, I think it's because it fell to Kavanagh, who, in fairness to him, has a wonderful left foot, and just put a perfect cross. Yeah. It was just into an unbelievable area. Like, it's not close enough to Conor Cairns to come for. It's, like, kind of too far beyond the two centre-halves to be able to get to it. It's right in that sweet spot where the fullback can't even get in to defend it properly. So, like...
Everything...
I think what I'm getting at is, on a different day, that ball falls to Kavanagh and he overhits the cross, or he underhits the cross, or the ball bounces off him and it goes out for throw-in, whereas it just happened... Like, I know we were messing about would we ever concede. Like, we're still not conceding chances at all. We just do not look in any way in danger. Even towards the end of the game, like, they were hammering balls in on top of the back four, and it actually looks a bit easy. I know that's probably tempting fate a little bit, but it just looks effortless. And again, like, I spoke to Gavin Malloy after the Bowls game. Darren brought it up with Joey about those Tuesdays in the AUL. I'd love to get up and have a look and see what a Tuesday in the AUL looks like. Because I just have this image of Joey O'Brien screaming at Paddy Barrett and Gav Malloy about defending and how to defend and the right way to do it. And it's interesting as well. Like, I think of it with Gav Malloy because he's a younger player. You know, you just think of Gav Malloy kind of eating out of Joey's hand with information, but Paddy Barrett, obviously, as well, is just... He's gone to a totally different level this year. don't know what it is. I don't know whether he's just, it's that he's comfortable, he's happy. I don't know what it is, but he just looks incredible. I listened to the League of Ireland late night. I actually listened to it yesterday in work, and they had Chris Shields on, and he was saying that, like, Duffer and Joey have turned Paddy Barrett into, like, Barresi. He's just been unbelievable. And it was actually Chris Shields that said, like, Paddy would have been a bit up and down kind of in the last couple of years. You kind of didn't know what you were going to get. You're either going to get, you know, like a 9 out of 10 or a 4 out of 10, but he's only been 8 to 9 out of 10 this season, for me anyway.
Yeah, no, absolutely. He's just, he's a Rolls Royce of a centre-back. I think that's the analogy that most people go to when you think of your centre-halves. He just does everything right, doesn't he? Like, it's very rare that he'll put a foot wrong, and it's very rare where he's on the ball and you'll be worried that he's going to cough it up, because he just looks so composed when he carries the ball, and he just has that quality where he'll pick out a pass and it'll be 20, 30 yards across the pitch. No one else sees it, but it just lands at someone's foot and he's created a chance out of nothing. Like, he's been so good. But you can say the same for the two of them. Like, together, best in the league. Yeah, why not?
There's a question about that later on that we'll come to. When you see in the starting 11, I certainly kind of went, why is this going to work? Like, who? There's obviously a change of shape. What was your kind of instinct when you seen the starting 11?
Yeah, I think Darren, as he always does with starting 11s and starting lineups, he'll send them on to all of us so he can kind of check it and make sure.
No, he doesn't send them on to me. Go on, continue.
But all the graphics looks good anyway. And then the message, I'll read it out for you. He sent it to me, sent me the team, and I said, I've been trying to figure that out for 30 minutes. Are we playing 4-4-2? Question mark. Because it was just, it looked so attacking to me. Like, it just looked like a 4-4-2. And I know you would love that, Doody.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I have to be totally honest. The way the team ended up panning out didn't suit me. I'll get to that in a minute. But I certainly took it. I don't know what it looked like on the telly. And as I say, I haven't watched it back. It actually looked like it was like a 4-3-3 with Matty Smith nearly in that kind of John O'Sullivan.
Yeah, Matty Smith was kind of in the 10 for most of it.
Yeah, he looked to me at times, though, a lot of the time, to be nearly dropping in with Kyle and Lunny. He was even like an extra kind of left-sided midfielder at times, which, like, you had told me last year, Matty Smith is going to, you know, be able to kind of be an extra body in midfield and give a dig out and work unbelievably hard. I mean, I'd love to see the miles he put in, because
he was everywhere. He covered every blade of grass in Inchicore. Like, I don't know how he's in any energy after the game. He was all smiles by the sight of it in the video. He looked delighted. So,
yes, yeah, it's a great little screenshot knocking about off him, all right, yeah.
I think that's a staple of the team as a whole. I think across the board, they just work their socks off. And I don't know if it's for the manager, if it's for each other, for the fans. I think it's just an accumulation of everything. They just do it because they love it.
I think it's probably a phrase that's bandied about an awful lot in football now. And it's probably because so many people are podcasting and so many ex-pros are coming out and getting interviewed and everyone seems to be in the public eye. But I lean on, like, there's like a culture thing there where, like, I don't think, now I could be way off the mark here, I don't think I've ever heard Duffer having to tell somebody to run, if that makes sense. You know the way sometimes you'd hear a manager, like, telling somebody to close the ball down or whatever. I haven't seen a lot of that Duffer. I think they seem to just, they're nearly, and I mean this in a good way, they're nearly robotic. And they just know, right, I have to go now. No, let's all stop. We'll drop off. And, like, if one person starts pressing, everyone else is in behind them. And, like, that's driven on by JJ and Mark Coyle have been incredible. Unbelievable. And I remember the manager getting laughed at when he mentioned JJ and Coyle as two of the best midfielders in the country. He was genuinely, I remember the quote tweets under that went mental at the time. But they've just been so good. Unbelievable. Like JJ Looney has just been like a man possessed this year.
Completely revitalized, rejuvenated, whatever you want to say. He looks like a different player. Like JJ always had the quality on the ball, but the work he's doing off the ball this season, it's just, it's incredible. Like he's just all, he always seems to be there to nick the ball off someone's toe and just restart an attack. And it's like, where was he? Like, I don't remember him being there, but he just, he appears. He's been so good. Like, I don't think you can fault him at all in any game.
No, and he's been very, like, his defensive stuff's been brilliant. And I know there's probably people bleeding, rolling their eyes at me and you sitting here, you know, like, rattling through the players and what they're doing right and what they're doing wrong. But he's been so, like, the defensive side of his game has just gone up a couple of notches in the off season. Again, I don't know whether that's something that was consciously worked on or whether it's just
everything's, you know, kind of coming together.
Yeah, maybe he's just maturing as a player and seeing the other side of the game, but he doesn't get mentioned a whole lot, JJ, and probably unfairly, I'd say. But like again, like Mark Coyle in the team of the week again. So is Paddy Barra, so is Will Jarvis. Coyle is just, you may, it's now just like the minimal.
Yeah.
It like, is. It's like you just expect an 8 out of 10 now. Mark Coyle and JJ Looney now every week.
It's just the standard they set for themselves. And I think like they'll be the fourth ones to turn around and say, no, that's where we expect to be. Like that, that's the levels we should be hitting. Like it should be 8 out of 10s. Like you remember when we were up in Talca after the Waterford game, how disappointed Mark Coyle was.
Oh, yeah. He was like, it was genuinely like we were after losing the cup final.
Like he was genuinely so disappointed in himself, how he played, like first game as captain. He has not looked like that same player since that. He's just a man possessed. Like he just chases everything, and it's not aimless. Like he doesn't do, like everything is done with a purpose, and he's so commanding in midfield. Like he's such a presence, and I think the armband suits him.
It does. He's one of those players that I would say opposition hate him. Like I've seen an awful lot of tears on Twitter there Friday evening. Twitter was gravy on Friday evening. Gravy on. But the amount of Pats fans fuming that he didn't get a second yellow.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, everyone's just so annoyed.
I actually remember the tackle on Keane Levy. Because I remember when he first put the tackle in that he got the yellow for, I stuck it in my notes app on my phone so I could go back to it and rewatch it. 28 minutes into the match.
That's why you're putting those videos together, Ben. That
detail. Stone Cold Mark Coyle.
Oh, it's so weird. Do you know what? It's the strangest thing coming on here every week and we're just having the love in. It is very, very strange. Usually there's like something you could pick and you could say, oh, like, you know, this isn't great. We were having a bit of a laugh there during the week that was it two seasons ago? We played Finn Harps, got tonked 3-0 at home, and people were calling for Duffer's head.
Yeah, that's where the gone by Easter stuff came, isn't it?
Yeah, he was out of his depth, and, you know, we don't need a, there's no room for learning on the job manager. You know, we need somebody now who can keep us in the division and all. Like, I know, look, hindsight is a great thing, but the turnaround in 2 years is just, regardless how the season goes, seeing somebody messing on Twitter there as well saying probably another 8 or 10 points and we should be safe. Like, it's dreamland kind of stuff at the minute. How well we're playing, the results we're getting. I do have a negative, Ben. I have a negative from the performance.
Hallelujah.
JJ Looney. Right at the end when he broke away. Oh, and has had the heaviest of heavy touches straight into Danny Rogers' hands. He came out of the dressing room after the game. The other way you walk up the stairs in Richmond. Yeah. He just walked up the stairs. He just looked at Owen Smith and just went, don't even mention it. Don't even mention it. Just walked off. But even that, like there, you're after winning another huge Dublin derby and he's more worried about not being able to seal the game at the end. Like that's probably a mentality thing as well, I would have thought.
Yeah, but this group just seemed like mentality monsters. When you speak to them, when they speak after games, like even every single post-match interview, when you ask about position in the table, they're like, oh, don't look at it, next game, let's go. Like, it's just head down, laser focused on whoever they have next. Great, we've won, park it, move on. And I think that's just a testament to the growth on the side, because, you know, 18 months ago, you might have looked at a back-to-back like this and it'd be a cause for celebration. Now it's just, this should be the norm. We're done, we're going again. So I think it's just a testament to them, really.
It's the whole thing, like, winning breeds winning. It just kind of gets into you and you get obsessed with winning, and certainly the way it seems to be at the minute. We had a message in from Luke Byrne, not that Luke Byrne, a different Luke Byrne. And he said that he thinks that was Boydie's most complete performance he's had for the Reds. What would you make of that?
Yeah, I think there's a definite shout in there. His hold up play is running, is pressing. Like, you have to look at it. He creates the goals. Like, I know, look, it leaves Will Jarvis with a lot to do, unbelievable finishes. But just the weight in the passes just to get the ball to him, especially for the second one, like, very easily could overcook them. And yeah, I think you have to look at the performance as a whole, and absolutely, I think it's one of his most complete performances, just because he did everything so well, every aspect of the game as a striker, as that, you know, number nine that's there to hold up the ball. He's done it all so well. Look, he creates two goals. He's, you know, a key part of both of those. The layoffs to perfection, not overcooked. They're just, you can get them out of his feet, nestle the ball into the net. I just, everything about the performance just screamed, that is what Sean Boyd can give you. That is why he's in the team. That's why he's there for selection, because he can do that. He's out pressing. He's winning the ball high. He's making a nuisance of himself. He's creating chances. Look, you'd look at it and say, I didn't notch a goal. We don't win the game without him. Again, he's a game winner. I've said it already. I'll say it again. I'll say it 10 times. Unbelievable performance, in my opinion.
It was, and I don't mind saying, after the first kind of 5 minutes, he had a couple of balls into his feet that just kind of bounced off him a little bit. And I was going, oh, Boydie, come on, will you? Get yourself sorted. And, like, that's, again, that's the performance that we're expecting of players now, that, like, a touch or two that are a bit heavy after 5 minutes, they're going, oh, come on, you know, we're not at it today. And, like, after the first couple of touches, he was just, he's unplayable. I do think Joe Redmond's one of the best centre-halves in the country. And he looked like a Leinster Senior League player. That's no disrespect to the Leinster Senior League, but it looked like a man against a boy at times. And if you're doing that to people or players like the caliber of Joe Redmond, I mean, you're certainly doing something right, that's for sure. As brilliant as it was on the pitch and a great result, and left us top of the league going into the international break by 5 points, I believe, isn't it?
I think it is.
The night was soured a little bit. Most people wouldn't have realised until the game had finished. Merrill Martins is obviously our strength and conditioning coach. Duffer, Joey, the players, everybody will regularly say he's the best they've ever worked with. Unfortunately, there was racial abuse thrown at him before the game started. And to give all credit to Pats, they dealt with it very swiftly. They were very open and helpful in whatever the club had to do to go through the right channels to get it recognised and to try and get it dealt with. It was a juvenile, I think people would have seen the statement. So as far as I'm aware, he's been identified, it's been dealt with. Mero is a class act. He's infectious. He's one of the busiest people I've ever seen. You'll regularly see him running up the touchline to give people energy gels and stuff, and you'll probably be looking going, who is that? But he's like an extra player. Like, I believe that's why he's not allowed in the dugout, is because he's too full of energy. I think he distracts the manager and Joey a little bit. So, look.
Well, I'm glad to have him where we do.
I am as well. Look, you've seen how we finish games. The intensity that we're able to keep up for 90 minutes. like at the end of the day, it's down to Mauro. Like, that's Mauro's job. He's the strength and conditioning coach. He has the players in outrageous nick. They have been since pre-season. Look, the likes of John O'Sullivan is probably the best example of it. He just looks like a machine at the moment compared to where he was last year. So, look, to give credit where it's due, the Pats, they were very helpful in getting it sorted. It's the fact that it goes on in this day and age still shocks me, but nevertheless, you can't, you just can't allow for some people, but everyone here is Wich and Mauro, that's for sure. And I know a lot of the players were very, very vocal on it before the game and after the game. So it was a bit of a sour end to the evening, but it's been dealt with by everyone that needed to deal with it. And hopefully we can just park it and move on, because it sure as hell shouldn't be happening in this day and age. It was over to the women then, Ben. And my God, did they deliver on Saturday in a huge game out in PRL Park against Paymount. Again, another professional performance, I would have said.
Yeah, look, it's... I remember after the Sligo game, I spoke to the manager and I was like, here, look, these games don't get any easier. Like, you're going to the league champions and you're going away, and I don't want to say pressure is on after game one, but performances, levels, you know, he wasn't particularly happy after the first game. I think he felt there was a result there, and boy, did they go out and deliver, because it's not an easy place to go. A 2-0 win, fairly comprehensive, comfortable enough. So, yeah, all credit to them. It's a big boost for the squad, and I think they're going to bounce into the fixture then at the weekend.
Yeah, it's a soulless, grim old place to go and play football. It's a soulless, grim old place to go and even watch football, so I can't imagine what it's like playing out there. But I only caught the second half. Let's say Saturdays in my house are mayhem, to put it lightly. So I did get to sit down and properly watch the second half. I was following on my phone in the first, but just, I know Owen said in his interview after the game that proud was the word that came to mind. The word that came to mind for me was professional. It just, Paymount didn't look like the defending champions. And I think that was down to our performance rather than them not performing. Now, of course, the goal, like the first goal coming when it comes after, what was it, 12, 13 minutes, definitely helps, puts Paymount on the back foot, causes a bit of maybe panic for them. I'm sure they had a game plan. Conceding 12 minutes in is not part of anyone's game plan, so definitely would have thrown a spanner in the works. But the goal, it was a great finish from Keita Keenan. It's funny when you watch it back as the moves unfold, and she just knows where to be, and she's gone as soon as the ball kind of drops in midfield. Appeals for handball. Don't know. That good old pixel on camera doesn't really allow you.
Doesn't do you.
No, doesn't.
That's favour, doesn't it?
Yeah, for a man who needs glasses anyway, I certainly couldn't make that out on that camera. But the pass, I believe it was Hannah Healy. That true ball between centre-half and full-back. It's funny, the full-back just completely lost the ball. Completely. She had turned towards her own goal. Keenan was gone off one shoulder. Healy had slotted a true on front of her, and she just got caught. She actually reminded me of the fullback. Was it Kieran Freeman for Pats that just kept getting turned inside out by Jarvis? That sound kind of, oh no, where am I? And it was just a bit of quality, an unbelievable finish, and perfect start. I'd probably safe to say when you go 1-0 up away there, you're expecting a massive onslaught, but we dealt really well with it, I thought.
Yeah, I think you go up, especially 1-0 up, defending champions, you're expecting a lot of pressure. But I just think one thing you're going to get out of this side, and it's one thing I think the manager has touched on, is professional performances. Like, they're going out to places and they're going to look to dominate the ball. They're going to look to impose themselves on the game. And I think that's what they did. I don't think, like, there's no other way to put it. They just imposed their game plan. And what is the quote? Everyone has a game plan until they get punched in the face. Yeah. I think that first goal was that punch in the face, and they never really recovered after that. And look, I never really looked at the game and said it could be in danger. I thought, again, as you said, it was just purely professional from that point on. And the quality in the side, the interplay, is just unbelievable. I don't know how Kiva manages it every week, because she's just constantly up and down that line. Same on the other side with Leah Doyle. Like, they're just constantly running in behind, given that option. So I think the goal was going to come. Maybe a unfamiliar goal scorer, but look, it's an incredible performance, really good result, and I think it really sets them up. I think that's the catalyst to kind of spring on now and go through the rest of the season, I think.
Yeah, we're talking about professional performances and, you know, getting the job done. Amanda McQuillan was brilliant. She, when she was needed, she popped up, which, look, ask any keeper, they don't particularly want to be overly busy. I wouldn't have said she was overly busy, but went about her business as she needed to. It earned her, obviously, a place in the team of the week. That was along with Keeve Keenan and Pearl, of course. Again, with Pearl, you just kind of... You never really give her the plaudits, because, you know, it's just there. You just know it's kind of going to happen. So well done to the three girls on that, getting into the team of the week. There was something about that right side of the pitch, because obviously Kerry Lettman came on, and I listened to Owen Whelan's post-match interview with Sean, and there's no way anyone could take credit for a crossing and finishing exercise the day before the game, and then that second goal. I'm sorry, but touching a Shane Farrell's and Cabin Teely a couple of years ago with that one, I'm not having it. Nobody should be claiming that one. Ben, what are we saying?
Dude, you just love to bring in a bit of misery, do you? You can't let anyone be happy.
Brilliant. An inspired substitution. Take one goal scorer off, bring on another one. Unbelievable. But I'm sorry, nobody's telling me that was meant. Nobody.
Dude, everything's intentional until it's not. So, I
got... No, I'd say nothing's intentional until it is. That's the way I'd go. I'm happy to argue this out with anybody. Brilliant again, the work rate, the aggression. Gemma Quinn, again, we should name, came on and was just going around luring people. Was just, you're not settling that ball, good luck. There's a shoulder, hit the gym. As the penal manager stuck his hand up looking for the foul. Never a foul, just out-muscled. Gemma was just hungrier to get to the ball than the penal defender was. And as I say, the little slip down the side and it ends up in the net. Nobody cares how it went into the net. And again, just a huge result. Like, you look at games like against the likes of Piemont, especially away from home, always going to be tough. But just done the job. Seeing the game out, always in control. I thought Maggie Pearce was brilliant. I thought Pearl was brilliant. Jess Gargan was brilliant. You could go through the whole 11, but I think Maggie Pearce in particular, for me, I thought was great. She just always seemed to be nicking ball when she needed to and used the ball really well. Just, again, all this positivity. Something needs to go majorly wrong the next couple of weeks, because this...
Don't be saying that. You'll jinx us. Touch wood or something.
Well, just nobody be getting jinxed. It's not such a thing. The Reds are winning it all. They are winning it all.
Across the board.
Yes. In a way, it's kind of a pity, I think, that there's obviously no league games this week. The women's Premier Division side are playing in the All-Ireland Cup. That's away to Cliftonville on Sunday. That's this coming Sunday, the 24th of March, up in Solitude. It's 2 p.m. kickoff on LOI TV. I'm sure if you gave the staff the option, they'd want a league game. They'd want to bounce into another league game and try and keep that momentum going. But look, it's another competition. That, as the lad said after the game on Saturday, they want to be competitive in. It was interesting. I think it was Rory Kirk said after the game that might be a chance to give other players a bit of game time, which I suppose in the grand scheme of things is perfect to be able to do that. But like the lad, Owen and Rory, I'm eventually going to call him Paddy Kirk at some stage. It's just going to happen. And I apologise in advance. I'm being very careful to make sure I don't get it wrong, Rory, so stick with me. But like they use the full complement of subs as well, and it's probably a great testament to the players that start on the bench that, you know, under no circumstances are they weakening the side by emptying the bench, and it's not like. But
look at the quality they brought on.
That's like, literally just
you're bringing on a Demi Quinn. You're bringing on Christy Gray, I think, came on. Rebecca Devereaux, Kerry Lettman, obviously. I think Mia Dodd was the last one. Like, they walk into any side in the country.
Yeah, 100%. 100%.
Like, so to have that kind of quality to come in and influence a game, like, I don't know how you wouldn't want to be there every week, because it's just amazing to have.
And I love the trust. Like, it's easy having those players there, but you need to trust them as well. You know, you need to have confidence in them that they're going to come on. They're not going to water down the team. They're not going to lessen the team. They're going to improve us and give us a chance of getting over the line. And that's exactly what all the subs did. So, again, it's, I feel like a pirate here, but it's a complete performance again. It's perfect. What more could you be wanting? A 2-0 win away from home against the defending champions? I'd take that all day. And I mentioned the fixture there this coming Sunday. It's away. It's up in Solitude. Anyone who is travelling, you pay at the gate. If you can't travel, it's live on LOI TV. It's a 2 p.m. kickoff. Great memories of the Satanta Cup for me. Well, not so great memories. It was one horrendous game.
Great memories. Well, actually.
Yeah, I'll never forget losing the final of it in Talca at home to Linfield. Oh, horrendous. Horrendous for a lot of reasons, but hopefully the Reds are lifting the All-Ireland Cup when that time comes. Another huge week for the Academy as well. Clean sweep. The men's under 20, 17s and 15s had wins over Drogheda, Bowes and Club Kildare respectively. Just... things are just going so well. It's just going.
It's a good time to be a Red. Well. It's a bit weird.
Yeah, it's crazy. We did get a couple of listener questions in. People a bit shy this week. I'm putting that down to some hazy heads celebrating Friday, Saturday, and then obviously with St. Patrick's Day. So that's what I'm putting it down to. First, Ben, before we do that, the Richie Rankins. I didn't ask you beforehand if you had something ready to go. Adam reckons we're better off not telling each other beforehand. It makes for better drama. So what say you? Have you got your Richie Rankins prepared?
Don't have them prepared, but look, we'll fire away, won't we?
Right. Do you want me to go first? Give you a minute.
Go on, yeah.
Right. My Richie Baker.
Well, if you take any of mine, I will call you out.
My Richie Baker, my all round good bloke, great Reds. I'm fully deserved this week for obvious reasons. Merrill Martins.
For God's sake.
I know. He's a great fella. I obviously, look, we see him on a Friday. That would be the extent of it. But he's just an infectious fella. He's so enthusiastic. He's a winner as well. You only have to look at him. Behind the goal on a Friday night. I'll get to see that. So yeah, my...
semantics.
Yeah, of course. Bit of antics over there. Yeah. So, Merrill's my Richie Baker for this week. And my Richie Winters, this is probably a follow on from a listener question. I'll dig up the name of said listener now, but it's going to go, my Richie Winters is going to go to John O'Shea, unfortunately. I'm sure John O'Shea, winning those Champions Leagues and those Premier Leagues, never thought he'd end up here. Being compared to a man who steals sweets from kids, but Connor Cairns overlooked for a week's training with the senior national team. It was Elliot that sent the question in, and he just said, "What do we think of Brian Maher getting a call up before Cairns?"
It's a disgrace.
Go on, Ben. You go on. Go on, you. Give us your opinion.
No, it is a disgrace. Like, look, no knock against Brian. Incredible keeper. Really good keeper. Really nice fellow when I met him. But if you're looking at the best keeper in the country, that is Conor Cairns. there is no shadow of a doubt that Conor Cairns is the best keeper in the country. So if you're looking for the best of an international, that's who should be called up. I don't think there's any cause for debate. I think this is the hill that I'm dying on this week. It should have been Conor, because he is the best.
Now, I'm going to be the independent adjudicator here.
I'll argue this.
I completely agree. It definitely should have been Conor Cairns. The only thing I would say on it is John O'Shea obviously came up from the 21s, so did Rene Gilmartin, who's the goalkeeper coach, so did the backroom staff. So they know Brian from being in the 21s. So I would presume that's why he got the nod over Conor. Is that a fair reason or excuse? No, it's probably not. But I would imagine that's why that decision was made. Now, it's the wrong decision. But I just to give a fair argument and give both sides of it, I would imagine that's why Brian got the nod. Ben, give us your Richie rankings, and then we'll move on to a couple of listener questions, and then we're out.
Right, say, Richie Baker, give it to... has to be Sean Boyd. Sean, look, Boyd got a lot of stick for the suspension and being out, and look, there was calls for his head at that point, but I think he's come back and he's looked really strong. He's added an awful lot, even just being that option, and I think you saw what he can add to the side against Pats. So, you know, the perseverance, the personality showed to come through all that and come out the other side and really, really make a case for himself in the side. Really good, really positive, and it's only good for us as fans and us as a club that he is performing so well, and hopefully he keeps it up. So I think that's who I'm going to go with, because obviously you robbed mine. I think I'll have to agree with you for the Richie Winter. I don't really have anyone else. And I got very riled up about the Conor Cairns thing. So I think that's definitely where my head is at. Is that a bit of a cop-out? Yes, a little bit. Is anyone going to fight me over it? I hope so. Please call us out and send us all your voice notes. Thanks.
Right. We had a couple of questions, Ben. As I say, not a whole lot this week, but we'll rattle through them nevertheless. If everyone is fully fit, what is your strongest starting 11? Reggie wants to know that. I don't know why he just asked us in the group chat, but look, we'll take it.
I would argue that it's that 11 that played against Pats.
So John O'Sullivan misses out?
Very harsh, I know, given the start he's had to the season. But I think just on paper, definitely that's our strongest 11. And performance-wise, I think it's hard to argue.
Is there an argument to be made for Griff in for Tyreek?
Yeah, I suppose you could. But I just think Tyreek has been really, really consistent, really solid this season. I think he adds an awful lot, especially for the set pieces, like his corner delivery. He's really, really good on set pieces. Going forward, he links the play really well. I think he adds an awful lot to the attack, and I think he's a really dynamic option going forward. So I think for me, Tyreek would kind of edge it just based on current performances. But that's what I'm going to go with. What do you reckon?
Yeah, it's... the only change, I think, and it's just based on minutes and the amount we've seen people, maybe if you put Matty Smith up there for Boydie and John O'Sullivan comes back in as that extra kind of midfielder. But again, it's kind of horses for courses as well at the same time.
It's
hard to argue that Saturday night for Friday isn't the strongest player for player. Shane Griffin, John O'Sullivan, really unlucky to miss out on it. Same with John Martin. I think John Martin's been great.
I think Cam has been really good this season. He looked like a completely different player.
Yeah, anytime he's been called on, Cam's been brilliant.
But he's done it. Like he's filled in as a centre-half. He's done it as a left full. Like he's just, there's no complaining. He comes in and he slots in. And look, he'll take that yellow if he needs to. Like he'll do the work. So I think he's another one that's harshly left out there.
Totally agree. Adam C. asked, is there a worry Duffer goes with him being so successful with the Reds so far?
No. Not in my mind anyway. I think he's very set on the project that he has here. I think it's definitely something he'd like to see through. And I think during the recruitment process for that Ireland job, when someone asked, would he consider it or has he been considered, his direct quote was, I have a job.
And didn't he say something like, and it's the best job in the world or something along those lines?
Yeah, I think it's along those lines. So it's a no from me.
I'd be the same. I don't know where he'd go. Like he spoke before about he's not really interested in going back to England because like he's home now with his family, so he's quite happy here. The only issue I could foresee would be if the FAI got the finger out and actually became, a competent governing body and offered him some kind of gig there, a technical director or something along those lines.
That's a very weird dream to have, but I don't know if it's happening.
I would hope not, but that type of thing would worry me because he's just so passionate.
He's infectious.
Yeah, that's the only thing. But no, in the immediate, for the next couple of seasons, no, highly, highly doubt he's going to go anywhere. Mark Calway, I think it says. Yes, Mark Calway. When are we going to Lewis Gavin Malloy? It's inevitable he's going to go to England. I agree. Unfortunately, I think it's a matter of...
The writing's on the wall.
Yeah, it's a matter of when, not if. Look, it's similar to the Jack Boylan thing. Enjoy him while you can, I would say, because I would say his days are probably numbered. Now, the other part of that is somebody's going to have to fork over money for him because he's under contract. So if somebody wants to come in and splash the cash, then you can put it back into the club.
I'll take 10 million euro.
Yeah, exactly. Either way, transfer him when he's gone at the minute. Like, he's unbelievable. That pains me. Losing Jack Moylan was bad enough. Losing Gav Malloy might tip me over the edge. Loads of people joking online, but a serious question, lads. Are Malloy and Barrett the best partnership in the league at the moment?
Yes.
It's a 100% resounding yes for me.
They complement each other so well.
Yeah, I think the only ones that like would get near them would be like Grace and Pico, and I think isn't it Josh Holohan is kind of playing as a third centre half of Rovers, but
yeah,
just the partnership thing. I think in a relatively short amount of time, how comfortable they are with each other is just unbelievable. I think.
It's where they've been playing together for 10 years. Like they just, it's almost like it's telepathic at this stage because, like, you very rarely hear them shouting at each other because they just know what to do. Like as you said earlier, a bit robotic, but I just think it's just everything is drilled into them. They know exactly where to go, what to do, and like as far as a ball playing centre back, both of them do it so well. Like they just carry the ball. They're excellent. And as a duo, even better. Best in the league, absolutely, by far.
Yeah, I love them. I love them all. I love everyone. I love everyone around where
I'm positive.
Yeah. How big of a statement of intent was it going to PRL Park and beating P-Melt?
Massive. Absolutely massive. You go and beat the defending league champions on their own turf, second game of the season, after maybe a result that you weren't too pleased with in the first round of fixtures. It's huge. Like it's a way here kind of moment, and I think it's something that you'll see the squad really push on now.
I totally agree. That was actually sent in by Steve Williams, not the goalkeeper coach, a different Steve Williams. Definite statement of intent, 100%. Going there, beating Piemont, convincingly, looking so comfortable. Watch out, I would say, to the rest of the Women's Premier Division. The last question, Ben, I think it could be the best question we've ever had on the podcast. Who would win in a Shelburne Royal Rumble?
Oh,
staff and players all included.
Right. Matty Smith. Look, I know what you're thinking. I've actually thought through this. You'll have your Joey O'Brien, who's kind of like your Kane. He'll go in 6, 7, 8, 9 eliminations. But he'll have a target on his back. He'll be turfed out fairly quickly. You know, when they all gang up and they turf one lad out, that'll be what happened with Joey. Matty has a bit of Shawn Michaels about him.
Yeah.
Bit of skin in the cat.
The heartbreak kid.
Exactly, yeah. So I think, and also he's a big lad. Like just thinking about it there. There's definitely
so many options when you actually sit down, and you're wrong. Quite obviously, Gav Malloy is the Kane, the big red machine. You dropped the bollock on that one, Ben.
I don't think so. I think Joey is the big red machine in this. Just by looks.
Joey just have to look at people and they'd be jumping over the ropes, I'd say.
Exactly.
Mark Coyle. We'd have to include Mark Coyle. He'd just be sprinting around the place constantly.
Stone Cold.
Yeah, just the glass shatters. I actually think I'd go for Paddy Barrett. I just think Barrett's got everything. He's not too big. Boydie's too big. He's too easy to top up, I would say. Too tall. A couple of people jump on his back now and get him over fairly quick. Paddy's not as tall.
That's fighting words. I'd like to see you back that now. Boydie, Burn Rumble. Dude, he wants to tip you over.
No, I don't want to. Paddy Barrett might want it, but I don't. But then you've got the other ones. Like, you've got people with brains there, like Jad. Could Jad, you know, do an L? Was it Jerry the King Lawler hid under the ring for ages one year? Just came back out at the end when everyone's gone. Could have people doubling up? Like last year, I would have said Tariq and JR would have been a good show. Double up, take a few people out. Liam Burt, good Glaswegian. Going to have no problem. I tell you who would be a real underdog. Cam. Cam's got that quiet man thing about him.
Yeah, I could see it.
I could definitely see it. But no, I'm going for Paddy Barrett in the Shelburne Football Club Royal Rumble 2024. That's for sure.
And when is that pay-per-view?
I'd say if we win the league, probably organise something like that somewhere. I'd say a few people would pay good money to see 30 Shells people in a massive wrestling ring baiting the head off each other. Because I certainly would. That's it, Ben. That's all the questions we got. So I'm going Paddy Barrett for the Royal Rumble, and you are going
Matty Smith, Shawn Michaels. Matty
Smith, unbelievable. Ben, thank you as always for giving up your week after being dying sick. Or giving up your night, I should say. You haven't given up a whole week, really.
I did give up all week, in fairness.
For a week.
I didn't. When I got back to work today, that's the only reason my manager knew I was sick. He was like, "How are you feeling?" I'm like, "Yeah, good." How sick were you? I was like, "I missed the Shells match." He's like, "Okay, so very sick."
Well, look, happens to the best of us. Ben, thanks very much for giving up your evening. I appreciate it. There's obviously no men's game this Friday. As I mentioned, our women's Premier Division side are up north. They're playing Cliftonville up in Solitude. It's a 2 p.m. kickoff this Sunday. If you can't be there, you can watch it on LOI TV. Up the Reds.
Up there,
thanks for listening to the 1895 podcast, the official podcast of Shelburne FC, Dublin's finest since 1895. Don't forget to give us a 5-star rating on Apple or Spotify, and subscribe now to never miss a new episode.